Hello, and welcome to MCNC Community Connect. This is a podcast where leaders and innovators regularly meet to discuss some of today's hottest technology topics and trends. My name is Tracy Doakes, President and CEO of MCNC, and today I'm excited to pull the curtain back and talk about what it takes to build and operate a world-class broadband network. I'm joined by four excellent experts for this conversation, including Chauncey Ray, MCNC Senior Manager for Facilities Engineering and Operations, Jeremy Rollins, MCNC Senior Manager of Outside Plant Engineering and Operations, Matt Valencisi, MCNC Senior Director of Network Architecture and Management, as well as Chief Network Architect, and Jamie Starks-Bentham, Chief Commercialization, Commercialization Officer with one of MCNC's important networking partners at ECC Technologies. And Jamie, I do want to thank you and ECC for being a sponsor of MCNC's Community Day later this year in November. So thank you very much for that. So everyone, welcome to the show. This is like, you know, me talking to family. These are all folks that I talk to on a regular basis outside of Jamie, but all of the folks here know Jamie really well. So before we get started with this conversation, let's take a few minutes to go around the room to share a little bit more about ourselves and your important roles. So Jamie, let's start with you.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. My name is Jamie Starks. I'm the Chief Commercialization Officer at ECC Technologies. We focus on working with open access networks like MCNC, helping to market and monetize your excess fiber capacity. And we have been MCNC's sales and marketing partner for your dark fiber assets to carrier, large enterprise groups, and data center clients for the past 14 years.
Wow. And Jamie, thank you for pronouncing your title much better than I did.
It is a mouthful.
It really is, especially in the morning. Matt, how about you?
Yeah, hi, this is Matt Valencisi. As Tracy said, I'm the Senior Director of Network Architecture and Network Management and the Chief Network Architect for NCREN. And myself and my teams are responsible primarily for the design of the network and the network connectivity services and the future-looking portions of that, looking towards the network's future. And we also manage, operate, and facilitate the tools that the Network Operations Center and core engineers use to manage and operate the network on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you, Matt. Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks, Tracy. Jeremy Rollins, Senior Manager of Outside Plant Engineering and Operations. Basically, my teams build and maintain the outside plant fiber network that gets us from point A to Z to support, you know, Matt's team and their electronic deployment. I'm also involved or over the locate department that protects the network in the field when other people are digging, installing other communications facilities, road moves, up to, you know, homeowners digging in their front yard. That team protects us. There's also another element, the GIS team that falls under me. We maintain the records on what goes where to assist in the locate team and making sure that all the documentation's presented to the 811 systems so we can know where our facilities are and also what is on our facilities as far as our customers are concerned.
And Jeremy, as an aside, I did have the opportunity to ride out with someone on your team, one of the locators, to get a better understanding of, you know, why people's lawns get dug up, yep. As well as what the colors of the paint are, what they mean, and how we do those locates. It was a really interesting day to be able to ride out and get a better understanding of that out in the field. That was pretty
Yeah,
interesting.
there's a lot to every little step that we do. You think about the locators going out and putting paint on the ground. There's so much that they are involved with and responsible for to keep our network protected. And there's a web of things in the ground that a lot of people don't think about. And
Agreed.
it's getting fuller. So.
Yes, or know what they do. So it helps me as a one of the leaders of the organization to be able to appreciate that. Chauncey, how about you?
Hello everyone. Chauncey Ray, Senior Facilities and Engineering Operations Manager for MCNC. I've been with MCNC now for almost 9 years in the facilities department. My team oversees all of MCNC's physical assets from RTP corporate to our 37 and counting colo locations around the state of North Carolina.
Wow.
We look oversee everything from electrical, mechanical, HVAC, power, all ranges of things. Plumbing, you name it, we put our hands on it. I come from a 10-year background of critical facilities management as well as commercial HVAC.
Wow. So, it's really interesting, Chauncey. Your world, just like Jeremy and Matt, will continue to expand over time as we see more expansion in what's needed from our backbone and fiber across the state. As many of the audience members know, MCNC's broadband network is the backbone of innovation in North Carolina, with over 4,500 fiber infrastructure miles connecting all 100 counties in the state. Our network is the primary broadband infrastructure for K-12 schools, the North Carolina Community College System, top colleges and universities across the state, nonprofit healthcare sites, state and local governments, public safety libraries, and much, much more. It's more than a data transport system offering a range of integrated technology services like access to national research and education networks, data center and cloud services, cybersecurity solutions through our vital cyber practice, network engineering consulting, and even specialized connections, including the support for the North Carolina Telehealth Network. But how did we get here? When we think back on the 45 years of MCNC's history and how it's turned into this vast fiber network that we know, love, and is very critical today. Jeremy, let's go to you first for your perspective on how did we get here?
I mean, there's so much history prior to me being here. As Chauncey said, him and I started fairly close to the same time about 9 years ago. The BTOP builds had already been completed across the state. There was a fiber element prior to that, some small networks extensions. I know there was a huge microwave network within the college systems that probably Matt can speak to a little bit better than I can, but from a fiber perspective, it was the big BTOP builds. We had an opportunity to build to rural North Carolina and really establish a footprint in areas that, in my opinion, the corporate side of the telecom world couldn't build to, wouldn't build to, because it wasn't economic. The network itself was attractive to me primarily because of that reason. I was on in the corporate side of this industry for I have been for 28 years. Obviously, 18 of those, 19 of those prior to coming to MCNC. And what we did was so attractive to me because it was solving a problem when we came into towns to build. Unlike, a lot of the other groups that build telecom towns were happy to see us. They were happy to see our crews coming in and providing broadband service to the schools and libraries that just didn't have it, didn't have the speeds to operate, didn't have the opportunity to serve or to have the technology that kids in the cities do, folks in the cities do. So, but not to run too long with that aspect of it, I think that that's in my mind, has been a primary focus of MCNC is to provide to the underserved. And I think that's kind of how we got into this fiber business.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Jeremy. We mentioned BTOP a lot, and so for our listeners, BTOP is the Broadband Technology Opportunities Program, and in 2010, MCNC received two of those federal awards that really helped to start that really large build of our fiber infrastructure, as Jeremy mentioned. Matt, what does it look like when we get it right?
So I think when we get it right, it means that the network operations center phone isn't ringing as much. It means that when we send out surveys and interact with our constituents, that we get very positive feedback. And I often say that when you're doing it right as a network engineer or network architect, basically what it means is you're not getting noticed. If you're getting noticed, you're probably doing something wrong. So if you're into a career that's about building a monument to yourself, this is probably not the career for you. You really like to fly under the radar, and because nowadays people expect it to work. It's just it's really become a commodity. It's no different than having electricity or plumbing in your house. You expect your internet to work, you expect your email to work, you just expect this stuff to work, and it's got to work. So when we're doing it right, we're not getting noticed in those ways that like, oh, I can't believe this isn't working. And you know how people get, how upset they get when they can't get on the internet and
Yes.
do their business or their entertainment or their leisure. So that's in my mind, when you're not getting noticed, you're doing it right.
Yeah, and that really makes sense. It's a lot like walking into a room and hitting the power switch. You don't really notice it unless the light does not come on. And then you're screaming. Is that pretty much the analogy, Matt?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
And when I can't stream YouTube or Netflix or TikTok, I mean, that's just first world problems for sure. But when we think about the critical infrastructure for education and healthcare, it's a really big deal. We have a successful broadband network that's not just a physical infrastructure, but an ecosystem of interconnected partnerships. So it requires a shared vision and a collaborative spirit among public and private sectors, utilities, and the communities that they and we serve. So it's really safe to say that building a network is a collaborative process. Chauncey, when you hear this, what does this mean to you?
With regards to building a network, I mean, you could take a look at the panel, the participants we have here on this panel right now. You take Matt, Jeremy, Jamie, and myself. This group alone, we actually handle or distribute fiber optic gear and the sales force to identify and generate the need for the service that we put out to our constituents. There's different levels. You can find partnerships throughout the network wherever we actually work, whether it's with the communities we build in, the vendors that we use when we're getting supplies and materials to build these networks, and internally with the different departments that we work with. It all has to work together. There's no one group that can lead. There's no one group that can do it all. There's has to be a collaboration amongst everyone involved so that we make this thing work positively. I think most important the customer base, the CAIs we support, K through 12, community college system, with their understanding and their voice of the need that they want, that collaboration with what we deliver as a service allows us to be successful in what we do, now and for years to come.
And you bring up an interesting point, Chauncey, about our CAIs or community anchor institutions. Yeah, that's really part of our mission, right? Is to ensure that we're serving them. And I think early on, Jeremy mentioned ensuring that somehow we are able to support connectivity for unserved, underserved, and overlooked. Jeremy, I know you have a lot of connections and collaborations that you wouldn't be able to operate without. Do you mind talking about that just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean as Chauncey said, it starts internal, with every group that we have inside, but there's a lot of external support that we could not operate this network without, specifically construction contractors. Chauncey mentioned material vendors. Everyone has a critical role in supplying us with the materials that we need, making sure that we have them on hand when we need it, continuously. It's a 24/7 operation, and our contractors are out there supporting us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so we can make sure that we have the uninterrupted network that Matt talks about.
Right.
That was a great point, Matt, by the way. If you're not noticed, you're doing it right. And part of that's the design that Matt, has continued to build with redundancy and the contract support that I talk about in the field, that when we have a damage at 2 o'clock in the morning due to an event of whatever nature, they come in all shapes and sizes. We make phone calls utilizing our network operations center. Whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, our contractors answer the phone. They get fiber splicers out there. They get construction crews out there. We work, in weather events. We work in again, any kind of scenario you can imagine. Perfect example, the hurricanes in Western North Carolina. Our
Yeah.
contractors were everything in getting those facilities, critical facilities, back up. And if it wasn't for that outside support, along with the inside support, we call an accounting saying, "Hey, I'm going to swing by a place in Charlotte tomorrow. I need something paid for immediately. That I'm going to load my truck up with, and we're heading out west to help support this disaster." And absolutely, it's done. I mean, so it's again, there's so many different players in the game, and we're fortunate to have some of the best, in my opinion. Again, I've been doing this 28 years, and I've worked construction and outside plant operations for the entire time, and I think that we have, the task force that gets out there and gets this network back up as quick as possible, better than any other group, in my opinion. Proud of every single person that works with us.
I don't disagree. I mean, you've definitely took the words right out of my mouth. When I first started 5+ years ago, when people would ask me, "Well, who's MCNC? What is that?" And I would say, "It is the best organization you've never heard of." And there's a reason for that, because we're really, really good at what we do. I don't know if Jim wants to use that tagline, but I always used to say that those first couple of years when people would ask who MCNC is. Jamie, from your point of view, can you talk about what cost-conscious connectivity means for underserved and overlooked areas, as we just mentioned earlier?
Sure. It really goes along with that collaborative approach you guys have been talking about, hand in hand. When I think of cost-conscious connectivity, that means looking at the problem we're trying to solve, being mindful of what it costs to build the network. Fiber construction is often a very expensive, line item to serve customers. And being both creative with ways we can minimize and offset those costs while still maintaining the high quality of service MCNC is known for. It's very collaborative between the sales team, Jeremy's team, Chauncey's team, and Matt's team. If you take an example of a customer in a rural area, first we uncover that they need service. Then Jeremy's outside plant team will look at the cost to build the fiber. Chauncey's team will look at the cost to add in any facilities that are needed. And Matt will look at the cost for the ne network architecture piece. While they're working on that, your sales team is looking at what other opportunities are along that route that maybe could be constructed and added to kind of offset costs to one customer. You know, is there an internet service provider out there that's looking to expand into an area that you're passing on that fiber pathway? Can we maybe get them involved to offset your maintenance costs or kick in some funds up front? And then, you know, when all else fails, if Jeremy's team works up construction costs and those are too high to manage for whatever opportunity we're looking at, we'll turn to Matt and say, okay, Matt, we can't make a dark fiber opportunity work. What can you do on the lit service side? Do we have an option to provide a different type of service that maybe still fits the need that the customer's looking for? And Matt then also reaches out to other partners and networks to see, okay, can we get there? What can we do to put this all together?
So, this is an interesting process that I have not been familiar with. So, I love doing these podcasts because I always learn something new, especially when I'm talking to our internal folks and folks we collaborate with. That's very, very interesting. I just feel like, you know, you describing this process is certainly new for me, and I bet for our listeners as well, as to how, you know, that balloon squeeze works from one side to the other in order to get to the right pricing model. And that's really, really interesting and something that I wasn't even aware of. So we're talking about, you know, what we do, how we do it, and even the pricing models. So let's talk a little bit about what our customers are looking for. Who wants to take that one? I know many of you are very close to our customers, you know, whether they're our community anchor institutions or other people that we collaborate, our internal customers. Who wants to take that question about what our customers are looking for from MCNC?
I can start with that.
Okay.
Your customers are looking for reliability. They are looking for a network partner that is going to be there with them when there are problems. They're going to be looking for a network partner that's going to be there when they're looking for a solution and provide a quality service. At the core of all of our discussions, whether it be a university, a data center, or an internet service provider, they're looking for those low latency connections, high capacity dark fiber, and an openness with the network owner, MCNC, to work together to find solutions. Sometimes that's to build new fiber pathways. Sometimes that's to add space at facilities for co-location, and regen. And we're just seeing a lot of need from that perspective on a collaboration with MCNC on those services.
And so we talk a little bit, or we've touched a little bit up on open network and what an open network is. Can one of you kind of explain what that means and how that makes us different from other providers of services like ours?
This is Matt. I can shed my perspective on that. From where I sit, it really is that we're willing to have conversations and do a little more customization and think a little bit outside the box more so than our competitors are able to do. So in some ways we benefit, you know, often you benefit from having scale, but in this particular case, we benefit from not having the scale that, let's say, you know, one of our much larger competitors might have. So we can spend a little extra time and try a few more different solutions. Obviously, we can't be everything to everybody. We are big enough that we can't, you know, grant everybody's wish, so to speak, but we definitely will go the extra yard and look at all sorts of different types of solutions to see if we can't help the customer one way or the other. We really hate to say no, and I think that's something that really sets us apart from our competitors.
You're also being an open access network means you're neutral. So MCNC doesn't discriminate against folks that want to use the network. A lot of network owners will only allow, their own lit services to be delivered over the network. They won't sell dark fiber or allow other providers to use their network to reach customers. And MCNC is open. You will allow anybody within reason that wants to use your network and your dark fiber to build off of your network and reach additional customers, serve new areas that maybe didn't have great service before, new customers that other people haven't thought to serve. You're open to any customer or any user, essentially.
Yeah, and I think that's
Yeah,
a
I never
really.
really thought about it. Sorry.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, I never really thought about it like that because I think I've been here so long, I just take that for granted. You know, people ask and we do, right? So that's, you know, it's interesting hearing it from Jamie's perspective.
Unselfishly providing opportunity. It's great.
Wow, that is a really good way of putting it. And when we, combine your point, Jeremy, about unselfishly, providing these opportunities and the high touch support that we provide to our customers, along with this open access network that allows everybody to play, is really what sets MCNC apart from other players in this space. And when I'm trying to explain that to people, and I'm sure you do too, when they ask, what's MCNC and why are you different from other players in this space, these are the kinds of things that we have to talk about. And so, as Jamie mentioned, having this reliable broadband is really crucial to economic growth, education, and community development in today's digital world. And that is part of MCNC's charter, is to contribute to economic development throughout the state of North Carolina. Creating a high-speed broadband network is a huge undertaking that demands significant investment, careful planning, a skilled workforce, and the ability to tackle complex regulatory and logistical challenges. It's often described as a long-term, high-risk, high-reward project, which is why public and nonprofit entities like MCNC are vital in bringing broadband to underserved areas. So far, we've explored the importance of collaboration in our planning and the feasibility of creating or expanding a network. So now let's get technical and focus on engineering, designing, and construction. Essentially, if I want to build a network, what kind of equipment do I need, and how should I go about doing that? Matt, I'm going to start with you.
So, you know, assuming you've done all the assessment about what the requirements are, you know, when you're building a network, you're really looking at it from a layered perspective. So, as we've talked about before, you know, this is a collaboration. We have to work with our internal colleagues and partners and teams and groups to do things in such a way that we can, you know, build out the network. So obviously or naturally, it starts at the very bottom with the fiber. We got to get the fiber in the ground. Once the fiber gets in the ground, we can light that fiber. And the type of equipment that we typically use to light the fiber here at NC REN is our DWDM system. You know, that's basically the layer one optical network that we use to then build our backbone. And our backbone is comprised of routers. And those routers sit on top of that optical network. And then, we build our logical topologies over that network, and we provide connectivity, especially to the internet, as well as, transport, Ethernet transport for, point-to-point, multi-point to multi-point connections to help facilitate people's wide area networks. Obviously, if we're offering IP services, we need to actually have IP space. So you better have some IPv4 and IPv6 space that you can use to build your network. And then obviously we have to run things like DNS and higher level services to basically enable that network. And then there's the network management infrastructure that we use to manage and monitor that network. And then we've got, teams of engineers and network operation personnel to basically deploy the equipment and to monitor and manage that equipment. So I think a common theme that we've heard during this entire podcast is people. You have to have people of all different skill sets. Many teams come together to build these things, work collaboratively. These optical nodes and routers that we're talking about, many of them are in our colocation huts that Chauncey maintains, and Jeremy's team put that fiber in the ground. And I'd be remiss without mentioning our stellar network operations team and our core engineering and implementation team that have to do all that work, and they do that work, sometimes in the middle of the night. So as you can see, it's quite a large and complex undertaking, but obviously it's personally rewarding when it all comes together and you're delivering that service and not getting noticed like we talked about at the beginning.
Yes, not getting noticed for the wrong thing. I
Exactly.
yeah,
Right.
I think it's really, really key. Jeremy, what's your perspective?
Obviously the pathway needs to be there before Matt can hook the high tech stuff up and provide the service. There's a starting point, that basically involves just looking at the area from a high level, point A to point Z. We've got roads to deal with, pathways, controlled access, non-controlled access. So we actually, again, being collaborative, we use contract engineering support to help us design the last of the path of least resistance. Our engineers do work with, the sales group, Jim's team, Jamie, to provide high level estimates and pathways. But once you get into the permitting aspect of it, things may change a little bit. So a big part of the beginning of the construction process is the design and permitting element. Once we figure out what a pathway is, the most sensible pathway, we reach out to the DOT, North Carolina Department of Transportation. We reach out to any railroads or any municipalities that we need to go to and basically request permission. Probably one of the biggest challenges of doing the work, to be honest with you, is the permitting aspect of it. And I think that that's changed really in my career over the last 10 years. It's got a lot harder to navigate, just simply because, we're running out of right of way. There's been so many utilities over the years building up and building up and building up, and separation requirements and, municipalities being cautious of who, what, when, where they allow people to go, future planning, that it's taken a lot longer to navigate those challenges. Once we
Can you
go ahead.
speak to the regulatory issues around some of that sometimes? I have heard Tommy tell me some of the most interesting stories about permitting and why we're not able to go some places or other places, or having to go around a place because of a protection or endangered species. Can you give us an example of that? Because I've heard several horror stories about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's the, you think about designing a route and permitting it and implementing it, and there are so many things to think about. Without getting into the environmental side yet, the first one road moves, the expansions, widening projects because of infrastructure, more people living, more cars driving, and when you're permitting for something like that, you're looking out 5 years, 6 years, 8 years at DOT future plans that might inhibit you from or prohibit you from building through that area. So taking those into considerations when obviously railroads are a challenge, going under railroad tracks, those are you typically, anywhere from 9 months to a year, year and a half to get railroad permit approvals. The environmental things that you mentioned, especially in, with federally funded projects, there are endangered species of poison ivy out there that you have to avoid on the side of DOT right of ways, which is one of the ones that Tommy brings up on occasion that we're currently dealing with. It's
And
you've
who
got
knew?
areas. Oh, go ahead.
And who knew? Who
Who
knew that
knew?
endangered poison ivy?
Yes. There are cultural elements that most people don't think about that we have to consider on some of these areas that we build in old home sites that may have historic interest that have been marked at some point in time that haven't really been assessed yet. Those come into play where it's okay, we need to avoid them at all costs. You might have to go down another roadway. National parks or state parks, CAMA, Coastal Area Management Association, if once you get within a certain distance from the ocean and Section 10 waterways and Army Corps of Engineers, and the list goes on of what we really have to navigate for maybe a mile build or a 1,000 foot build. You might have to interact with three of those agencies, and everything takes time. And obviously there's a broadband explosion going on in the country right now, in the world, for that matter. Everybody wants to build, everybody's getting in line. It's becoming more and more difficult to navigate those challenges, definitely.
Yeah, I
Before
don't
you even put the first piece of conduit in the ground.
doubt.
Let's not talk about rocks and,
Right.
boring waterways. It's there's a lot to it, a lot to navigate.
Yeah, there really is. And when you talk about the expansion and growth of, a state and the development that happens in areas across the state, which we want to see, right? But that impacts the ability to build, or when there's expansion and widening of roads, and the impact of what we do when those things happen. It made me think about, our hero project, the High Speed Economies for Rural Opportunity, which is nearing completion. And you talk about some of the challenges that you've mentioned along the way with this particular build. And I also remember MCNC's big BTOP project, and I believe in 09 when we had to run fiber under Lake Hickory, as well as along the Virginia Dare Bridge in the Outer Banks. Or alligators that were in the way. I heard stories about that. And they were all, pretty incredible engineering challenges to face, along with the things you just mentioned, Jeremy. Are there other, unique situations that that you've encountered while building out the network over the years? And this is for anybody to answer.
Oh, we've had so many. It's not just building out the network, but you talk about what the challenges that we had to endure while building it. There's also more to come while maintaining it. You talk about the alligators. You talk about the water moccasins. We've got areas that we still maintain, that we occasionally, have outages on that our crews, our contract partners, our engineers, our in-house guys, we have to get down in there and work in those same areas that we had challenges during the build. Great example. We've had outages caused by beavers underground. You don't think about stuff like that, and until you got something that digs underground and finds it, something that looks like a carrot and some black rainbow licorice, and go ahead and chew into it. And there's so many, and they're always cropping up. You talk about Lake Hickory, long lake bores, getting in boats and locating fiber underwater. That all that stuff has to be maintained, and there's a lot to it, and there's a lot of challenges, and I think it's exciting, in the span of my career, we've done some pretty insane things to keep fiber networks up, specifically, during hurricanes, Outer Banks, using jet skis to pull fiber across breaches on, out in Buxton, and I mean, there's hiring dive teams to intercept conduit underneath the Washington Bomb Bridge, perfect example. And again, that wasn't on an MCNC facility, but just there's so much interesting, there's so many interesting things that happen in maintaining a network and keeping things up. The hurricane, another opportunity to just, see what we can do to keep this thing together and to keep our customers happy, and that's the ultimate goal. And sometimes you gotta think outside the box to be able to do that. And I think we do a great job in doing it. Like again, I mentioned being proud of our partners. I'm proud of our partners and proud of our engineers for thinking outside of the box and keeping the network whole as much as possible in the event that something happens.
Admittedly, though, using jet skis to locate whatever seems pretty doggone fun.
Jet skis, boats. I mean, I've seen it all. I've seen it all.
Anyone else?
Well, I was just going to chime in and say that the things that happen that are strange or challenging above that physical layer, they're simply not as interesting as a jet ski. And some of the ridiculous acts of insanity that we did during the Hurricane Helene recovery, as Jeremy's pointing out, like these guys do some truly, crazy stuff that, because it's physical, it's tangible, you can touch it, you can feel it. I mean, there was an outage caused in 2010 by somebody in Japan, initiating a BGP advertisement with a, malformed autonomous system number, and that causes an outage. But like, that just doesn't have the cachet as, pulling fiber on the back of a jet ski, if I'm being
But
honest.
just as important, for sure. Go ahead.
Obviously, our guys face stuff in the middle of the night and do a great job recovering it when there's an oddity in the network, and I'm just, there's all sorts of stories of having to track people down and get keys and, make late night trips and all these sorts of things. But I'm really struggling to come up with anything as interesting as Jeremy.
Well, I was just going to say the rerouting of the optical networks. Again, we can use the hurricane as an example. When we were struggling out there, there's only certain things that outside plant can do, especially in the immediate hours of something going down like that. We had problems with access to areas, for days. Just because the road infrastructure wasn't available. There were trees down everywhere, and you guys were able to go in and reroute traffic and work magic on the backside. I think that's amazing to me, not really understanding 100% the technology behind it. Obviously, I'm not a network architect and don't have Matt's background, but that's amazing to me, Matt, what you guys are able to do to reroute traffic from an area that has an issue around the other side of the state. I mean, I think that that would be a something to speak on.
Yeah, and I've got to give credit where credit is due, right? The boots on the ground folks are basically the core engineers at that point, right? They're the ones that actually have to get into those devices and on an operations level make that happen. So, we all huddled together. I remember those calls. It was you, me, our colleagues Ray, Will, their direct reports. A lot of people are on these bridges. Hey, what should we do? Can we do this? Can we do that? And then, they got to go make that happen. So that's just another great example of, when these catastrophic things happen, how we pull together as a group. And, there's so many people involved. It really takes all of us to make that happen, to make those repairs happen, and a lot of input from everybody to put us in a position that when those things do happen, we have options. That goes back to your comment before about, making sure there's high availability built into the network. That gives us those options when these catastrophes happen, that we have options to potentially route around these things to try to get the network continuity back so that the connectivity services are restored as soon as possible.
It's so heartening to hear you all talk about how you work together in order to accomplish the goals of MCNC. I think for all of you, the work that you do is nothing short of heroic, especially in times like the hurricanes and these challenges and obstacles that all of you face when we have these emergencies and disasters that happen across the state, as well as day-to-day stuff like squirrels chewing through fiber, which is just as important because it affects, as Matt mentions, the availability of the network. So it's really important. Let's change focus a little bit because building a network is one thing, but running it and selling the services offers a whole new challenge. So this is really the engine of the business and how we provide this dependable connectivity and services that Jamie, I think you mentioned early on as well, maintaining this exceptional 100% uptime on our core facilities really underscores our dedication to delivering that reliable and uninterrupted connectivity to our customers. So by maintaining this high uptime, we enable the organizations that we support to operate seamlessly, support their productivity, and allow them to concentrate on their core objectives. We've also maintained a 100% customer satisfaction rating for several years, which I think is just unheard of. It truly, truly is in other organizations I've worked on or worked in. They would have paid for these kinds of numbers that we see from our customer engagement and satisfaction. Chauncey, you recently said something that resonated with me. You compared maintaining a network to changing the oil in your car while it's still running. I really didn't know that you couldn't do that, but if you could talk a little bit about what you mean by that and more about the knock and the overall operations of our network.
Sounds like an instance when I open my mouth when I shouldn't have.
Well, it's out there now, so.
yeah, I mean, basically, the fiber network itself is a 24/7, 365 operation by design. From maintaining for issues, regular maintenance, emergency issues, anything of that nature. Where we use the NOC for our regular maintenance and monitoring, addressing outages due to cuts, optic gear failure, and sometimes HUT equipment failure. The network cannot experience any disruptions. I think this is the basis of our SLA with our customers, that we either operate 24/7, 365, or we are getting operations back up within a certain period of time. This is what we promise to our customers. So when we have these instances where we have to address situations, I kind of look at it as electrician would call it hot work. We're working with the power still on. So we try to take advantage of windows when we have the opportunity. Most of the work is done at our 12 a.m. to 6 a.m. window of opportunity or maintenance window. We try to take advantage of downtime or i.e. for like our K through 12, the out of school time, summer times, where if you're sticking with the simile of working on a vehicle when the traffic is low, speed is down. So we would rather, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, we would rather work on a vehicle or change the oil, not at 70 miles per hour, but rather in a school zone at 25 miles per hour, where we cause as little disruption as possible. Basically, that's whether we're working on an emergency or a scheduled maintenance window, anything in that range, just to kind of limit the disruption to our constituents to the best of our ability. And again, that's probably why we stay where we are right now, not in everyone's mouth, because we don't cause issues. So if we do have issues, we take care of them quickly and quietly.
Yes, and high with the high touch response to our clients, which makes a huge difference, and it allows us some grace where other providers may not get that. So I understand the analogy a little bit better, so I won't be changing my oil at 80 miles per hour. I will try that in a school zone. But Jeremy, let's expand on this because MCNC has this rich history of incredible innovation, customer service, like I just talked about, support. We also remain forward-thinking at the forefront of cutting-edge technologies. So can you discuss emerging technologies and trends you're observing and share how MCNC consistently manages to future-proof its network infrastructure?
I mean, I can from an outside plant perspective. I mean, everything's getting better. I mean, fiber optics are getting better. The jacketing is getting better. The armor's getting better. The conduit's getting better, and they're utilizing micro duct, and so you can put more fiber in a smaller package. The we've recently purchased an 864 count fiber that's smaller than my pinky finger. So as far as the technology is concerned with outside plant, everything's just getting better, as it should, over time. That being said, there's still fiber running that was put in the ground in 1980, 86, that is still functioning. It might not be as pretty as MCNC's fiber built, 15 years ago, but again, I think that future-proofing infrastructure is the redundancy that Matt would be able to speak to a little bit more than me on the technology side of things. Long story short, outside plant, the stuff just keeps getting better and more easy to use and maintain and get up quicker. And if you want to talk to your end, Matt.
Yeah, and so Matt, can you? I know you probably have a lot to say about this, but as Jeremy mentioned, there's redundancy, but there's also resiliency when we talk about future-proofing network infrastructure. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so I think when you're talking about resiliency, what you're really doing is you're talking about high availability or just availability in general. So whenever we build systems, we try to make sure that, for example, in some cases there's two systems in a location, in some cases they're a single system but it has highly redundant power and line cards and route switch processes or route processes or timing and control, whatever the vendor is called, the brains of the unit. You always have everything doubled up. There's N plus one redundant power supplies. When we talk about huts, fiber into huts or fiber into colo, carrier neutral colo, Data centers, we try to make sure that we go in with at least two diverse entrances, so that a single cut can take down a facility, a single piece of equipment failing can take down a facility. Some products are more resilient than others. For example, you can pull the timing control out of an optical node and it will still pass light and the demands will still stay up, that the waves that we pass through them, you just can't make any changes. And routers are a little bit more cranky. They're not going to work if you pull out the route processors. But in those particular cases, we make sure that we have two route processors, or we make sure that we have redundant systems and the downstream systems are connected to both of them. So we build resilient, redundant topologies that allow us to basically keep the network up and running. When there's a failure, we try to make sure that we're covered at least, two failure scenarios. You start to get more than two failure scenarios, then starts to create additional complexity and expense that maybe isn't prudent, in terms of operating the network. So, there's those factors that you have to weigh when you're building that type of availability into your network. And certainly having that high availability allows us to perform maintenances in a more graceful way. So if we can perform maintenance on, one node while the other node remains up, that sort of thing. And so that I think that helps. And any network that we are going to be building, or any advancements that we make on the network, we're always going to be thinking about that high availability. So any future design will have that same attention to detail where high availability is concerned.
Very good points. So we've talked about how it's built and now it's operating. Can you elaborate a bit on what the customers are looking for in a network, Jamie?
Sure. So I primarily deal with dark fiber, which is the unlit or unused fiber strands in your fiber network. Customers will lease or IRU fiber from MCNC to provide their own network electronics, switches, routers, to light that fiber themselves and transmit their own data. Dark fiber gives those customers an extremely secure connection, and they can use it to transmit an unlimited amount of data. So instead of paying for a 10 gig internet service, they could transmit hundreds of gigs of data over a pair of dark fiber or even a single strand of dark fiber. Oftentimes, these dark fiber customers are internet service providers, big data and tech companies, research institutions, or data center and AI groups. They're looking for high strand count dark fiber that is connected by well-planned and laid-out co-location facilities that they can use to regenerate that data signal every 50 to 100 kilometers. They're looking for a network provider who will collaborate with them and build to their locations, like MCNC will. And above all else, the most important thing to any of these customers is reliability, whether it's a dark fiber customer or a K-12 school or a university. They're all looking for a network partner who can operate a network with little to no downtime and who can respond and repair any of those outages or issues quickly to restore service. That's the most important thing. And as you guys were talking about, earlier you said the We know we are successful because we're not getting calls. I have had many customers who have extremely high bandwidth needs, extremely sensitive operations, stop me and tell me how great MCNC's team is to work with, how great of a job you guys all do communicating during outages, and how quickly you get services restored. MCNC's team does an excellent job of this. And for that and other reasons, that is why these carriers, data centers, universities, healthcare institutions, and other industry leaders look to MCNC for their fiber and network needs.
So, Jamie, I will say this is the best definition of dark fiber I have ever heard.
Oh, great. Great.
It's really hard to explain to people, dark fiber and lit fiber and what they mean. And this is the best definition. I could not write fast enough, so I'm probably going to have a sidebar with you so I can get
Sure,
that
sure.
written down, especially when people ask me. So thank you for that response and that definition that I can file in the back of my brain. So, of course, this has been an amazing discussion. And of course, I'm going to say that because I think each of you are really incredible and insightful about the work that you do and thinking about the future of the needs of our customers. I will say that it's definitely piquing the interest of the engineer in me. Don't worry, I'm not going to try to take anyone's job because. I am not experienced and an expert in engineering the way you all are, but it does take me back. Thank you for all that each of you do, and I appreciate you being here and sharing your thoughts and insights. We have time for a final thought from each one of you for our listeners. I'm going to start with you, Jamie.
I guess my final thought is really just thank you all for working with me on all of these projects. It is very collaborative, the work you guys do designing and building networks. Jeremy, whoever on your team is braving that alligator. We certainly wouldn't be successful on the sales side without the great work that you guys are doing. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you, Jamie. Matt?
First, let me thank you for the opportunity to participate in the podcast. It was a lot of fun. And I like hearing other people's perspectives. It really helps broaden your own, your own perspective. And I'm looking forward to the future. We have a great team here at MCNC. We have great customers. This is just a great area, so I'm really looking forward to what we're going to be doing in the next few years. It's going to be good.
And I look forward to having you all back to talk about that at some point. Chauncey?
Thank you for the opportunity to join the conversation. It was pretty cool. Never been a part of the podcast, so I was very lit about getting in here. I'll say I came from a background of commercial HVAC and commercial facility management, but coming to MCNC, fiber was not anything I knew anything about at all. I was totally blind coming in. I thought I was going to take care of the building and that'll be it, but I was prepped for other things. And getting into the field where I am right now and working with the people I get to work with every day. I mean, Jeremy and I, like you said, we came in at the same time. He had much more experience in the fiber world than I did, but working with him, I've learned a lot that I can actually put in my pocket and say I'm kind of experienced in these things. And working with Matt and his team, I kind of say I build the floor for those two guys to dance, for bring the fiber in and Matt to have the equipment, and we have a song and dance in my hut. So it's been fun, and I truly enjoy it. I'm glad I made a move to come to work for MCNC. Yeah.
And I'm glad you're here on the podcast. And I would love to have all of you back at some point. And your analogies are just chef's kiss. I gotta tell you. I would like to see some of those dances in the huts, but I'll wait. Jeremy, last word.
Mirroring what Chauncey and Matt said, grateful to be on this podcast. It's been fun for sure. And it's nice to, talk about what we do and why we do it. That's the reason that I came to MCNC again, being on the other side of things, pumping out, fiber, turning customers on. That wasn't what I saw MCNC being all about. It was more serving the community, serving them with a good product, specifically the attention to, rural areas that again didn't have this service. And once I saw what MCNC was all about as a construction partner, I built a couple of rings for MCNC years prior to me coming here. I knew this was where I wanted to work. It probably took me 5 or 6 years to get in, but I always reached out to HR and to Tommy Jacobson and Peter Valentine, and said, when can I get in? What do I need to do? And I just bugged them until I think they got sick of me calling them. And long story short, grateful to be a part of such a great mission that is different from the norm in this industry.
Yeah, and I agree. I've done a lot of these podcasts. I will say this one is the most heartening for me. I mean, obviously, because I know all of you getting to know Jamie, and I am so proud of everything we do at MCNC, and I know your heart and passion are in this work, and I'm very thankful to be at MCNC in a place where that is the case. Again, thank you for joining us on MCNC Community Connect. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. I know I have, but I'm biased. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts that are available online and make plans to join us again soon for our next discussion featuring technology leaders, innovators across North Carolina and the nation. You can listen to all episodes of MCNC Community Connect now on mcnc.org, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.